Okay, let's do that one.
Let's talk about some music.
Let's talk about some music. We don't ever talk about music because Ash won't let us.
You know? Yeah, and he's gone, so we're going to do whatever we want.
So we can do whatever we want. Yeah, we're going to talk about music. Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 233, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And we're down a member today, the two of us.
Ash is on sabbatical.
He is on sabbatical. He's in Bali, I think, right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's doing like the whole eat, pray, love thing, right?
Yep. That's what I heard. That's definitely exactly what I heard.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah. He is playing the character of Julia Roberts. Is that right?
I think so. I think that's
and like
the one.
Weird. Like he's dressed as her and everything. He's going all. He's full on. So
the full more, Roberts.
The full Roberts. More power to him and his efforts in Bali to find himself, and hopefully he does. Knowing Ash, it's in his butt. He should check there
probably.
First.
Yeah, we'll hear about his adventures when he returns.
It's true.
So we'll just. I'm pretty sure you and I know how to talk for an hour.
We have, over our lifetime, figured out how to talk to each other for an hour or so at a time.
Yeah, should be pretty good.
Yeah, and this talking will be brought to you by Loot Crate.
Fantastic.
Loot Crate's May theme is power, and in this month's box, you can look forward to items from Marvel Comics, World of Warcraft, which has a movie coming out, Dragon Ball Z, and more. There's going to be a t-shirt and a collectible pin that's guaranteed every month. And everybody should get this thing because it's awesome. Loot Crate is really great to us and we appreciate them. So head over to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA and get a little discount and help out the podcast and get some t-shirts and World of Warcraft stuff.
Absolutely. And there's not just they've expanded since we started doing stuff with them. They have the original Loot Crate plus a DX and a level up add-on for Loot Crate plus Loot Gaming and Loot Anime. And
Loot Pet.
Loot Pet as well, yeah. So there's plenty of stuff for whatever it is that you are interested in.
Yeah, so go get some cool stuff every month. Plus, who doesn't like getting boxes in the mail?
I know, that's the best part, right? Is it's always exciting even when like an Amazon box shows up in the mail and I know what it is.
Yeah.
And so when it's a mystery, it's even more exciting.
I don't know how your family operates, but Melissa doesn't get the mail because she knows that I get so... this is real. She knows that I get so excited about getting the mail.
Yeah, I do too.
She'll leave it down there for me. So like I get to get the mail out of the mailbox. I get to bring up packages. Mm-hmm. I don't open her mail or her packages, but I like getting it. Like I like getting the mail. It's really fun to me.
It's very exciting.
I get really frustrated when I get home and there's just like a FedEx tag and they're like, sorry. And you're like, what? And I got to drive to FedEx and get the box. A mess here sometimes.
Yeah, but, you know. I get frustrated when it's just a red plum. Do you get the red plum?
What's a red plum?
It's just like the paper flyer with like the weird coupons in it. And you're just like, I'm not gonna go to Arby's this week. Like
the Val pack.
Yeah, the Val pack. It's same idea. You ever leaf through those just to see what it is?
On occasion, but it's always like checkbooks, like weird
pool cleaning services,
weird clay figurines that you can buy. Precious Moments.
Precious Moments, yeah.
How are they still... They still are like a huge... They make money.
Precious Moments does?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
They're like in all the Hallmarks. I guess it's just grandparents, right? Do you turn into a grandparent and immediately enjoy Precious Moments?
Hard to say, but I mean, I have to admit my tastes are changing, you know, as I age, so it's hard to say what's going to happen.
Do small cherubic children in the form of clay figurines make you happy
It doesn't appeal to me right now, so.
But it could later.
I guess I have some time.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, before I have to buy the rooster for my kitchen.
It's true. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you got to get that.
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet.
Let's do the rundown.
So we're going to do something different this week. Since it's just the two of us, I've created what I like to call the box O topics, and we will just reach into the box and pick out something to talk about and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Does that sound good?
Sounds all right.
Cool. So
if I said no.
No. Well, we'd really have to scramble to put different show notes together because that's all I got. That's all I got for you.
All right. Then yes.
So what do you want to start with? Do you want to start?
Sure. What have you been up to?
Oh, well, I thought, are we going to do what we've been up to as well?
Yeah.
Cause what I've
been
up to
here,
what I've been up to is sort of part of the box of topics.
Oh, well, you don't have like other stuff you've been up to?
Things
going on? Anything you want to get off your chest?
Not really. I've just been, basically just watching TV.
Yeah.
Like the normal TV that I watch, but a lot of stuff is winding down, right? But there have been some, announcements of new fall TV shows. I think NBC came out with their, lineup for fall 2016, 2017.
Oh, yeah. They announced all the cancellations and started talking about the fall TV that's coming.
Yeah. Sad to see Agent Carter is not getting picked up, but Haley Atwell is going to a different pilot on ABC.
They also did not pick up or even, I think, end up signing for the pilot of Most Wanted.
What? Oh.
Yep. They passed on the Bobby and Hunter show. It has been officially passed on.
When was that announced? Just recently?
Maybe I got some backlines. Maybe I got some back-end communications going on here.
I wonder if they're going to come back to the show then.
From same said backlines, I have heard that they are actually contracted to ABC and Marvel, so that most likely they'll just write them back into the show.
Oh, that's nice. Okay.
Yeah, so hopefully they'll be back. I'm A-okay with that. I would have loved to see a series with them, but like I feel like S.H.I.E.L.D. sorely misses them right now, so I'm okay with them coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I definitely miss them as well. So sounds like something good for next season.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, so, you know, I like to watch Grimm. Really excited about that. That show is getting picked up for next year.
I feel like that show has lucked its way into like a weird Saturday time slot or something that no one's paying attention to, and they're just like, well.
Oh, for real?
It's in like, we'll just keep letting this one run.
Yeah, it's in the Friday night death slot, but I think that it gets a lot of that. What's it called when people watch it on Hulu?
Oh, Plus 7?
Plus 7, yeah.
Plus 7.
Yeah, so that's how we watch it. And at this point, it's basically just a show for fans of the show. Unless they completely reboot the series, I don't see how anyone could get on board and understand anything that's happening at all in the show.
Right. Yeah.
But that's really exciting that there is a show. It'd be like if you tried to watch Lost, you know, in season 4.
Right, like in the fifth season, yeah.
Yeah, it would make no sense at all. So other than the things that I'd like to talk about later, some TV. There's, I don't know if you saw, NBC's got a new pilot on the schedule for something set in the Wizard of Oz, the Land of Oz.
What?
Kind of like a new, like, almost like a Streetwise Dorothy is kind of like what's going
really?
On with that. Yeah.
I haven't seen, no, Melissa would be ecstatic to hear this news.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up and let you know. And then there's something about like time travel, the new show about time travel. I'll look it up while you're talking, but
there's a procedural for Haley Atwell that somebody picked up.
Yeah, that's going to be on ABC, I believe.
ABC?
Yes.
And then I actually have a related story that's related to the thing I was going to say I was up to anyways, if you want to hear that.
Oh, sure. I did find the shows I'm talking about before we move on.
Go for it.
The Oz show is called Emerald City.
Hmm.
And Dorothy sort of looks very modern. So interesting to see what that's going to be about. And then there's another show, like, which appears to be the only science fiction show other than Grimm on Sci-Fi, is called Timeless. And the catch line is, they're time traveling to the past to save America's future.
Huh.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's from people that worked on Revolution, Supernatural, The Shield, and producers of The Blacklist. So that looks interesting. Oh, and did you see there's a new show called Powerless that's coming out? With Vanessa Hudgens and Alan Tudyk, and I think it's a show set in the DC universe but it's people that don't have superpowers, and I think it's
called Powerless.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. There's a show called Powers that's basically the same thing. That's a comic from I think Marvel or Vertigo.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the show other than they have a Twitter. And that's it. And they started tweeting. Because NBC, oh, Danny Pudi's in it too. That's
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's called Powerless. It's in the DC Extended Universe. And that's all I know about it.
That's cool.
So that's me. What's going on with you?
I know I've talked about this, but I've been doing improv.
Did
we get to talk about me doing my first show? I can't remember when I fell off of doing the shows. I don't think I have.
No, I don't think we've had a chance to talk about it. So how did it go? How does it work? You're level one, right?
Yeah, it was like a level one class. It really sounds like a cult. It's ridiculous. I think I tweeted a joke. Yeah, I think I tweeted a joke about New Balance sponsoring improv classes. It's like the only tie that binds us is our chunky footwear.
I totally get that. Is it like that SNL sketch where all the people in the black tunics come out and do like the interpretive dance?
Yeah, that's what we did. We did a really long interpretive dance set to some new age jazz. It was really weird.
Oh, cool.
But we were really making a statement about politics and money involved in politics.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
I feel like Absolutely. We got that message across.
Excellent.
So it's like, it's weird. So for the first level, it's just an introductory kind of like survey course almost. So you just do like basically everything. Like you learn every, like a little piece of each part of what improv is. Mm-hmm. It was really fun. I really loved the class, and it really kind of like, I was talking to Amanda on Twitter about it, Fluid Fire, and she and I were going back and forth. She was like, oh, I've always thought about it. And like, honestly, this is a full on encouragement for everybody. It's absolutely wonderful. It really makes you think and act differently just in life, mm-hmm. let alone like learning how to kind of roll with jokes and punches and be supportive and stuff. But the show went well-ish. There was a guy in our class who's like this really big actory kind of guy.
Okay.
And I mean big, like both in physical presence and like personality. He's very loud and kind of boisterous. Mm. And in class, he was relatively supportive. Like he would pull other people out with him. He would let other people do scenes. Like if he felt like he had gone a couple times already, like he was very much like aware of it.
Yes.
And then I don't know what switch got flipped when we hit that show, but the stage we went on, you will be familiar with this. Stages are of different sizes, and the one that we were going to play on is very tiny, like the size of like maybe larger than that Jacksonville show we did.
Oh dear.
At the Shack or something, whatever that place was called.
Yeah, I remember.
So like a real tiny, like, you know, maybe 15 foot wide.
You're tops. Talking about the place that had the porch out back?
Where we had to go because there was no time. You couldn't fit inside of the venue with everybody.
Yeah, I remember.
It's like maybe a 15 foot square, essentially. It's a really tiny stage. So it's hard to get in and out of when there's a lot of people on it. And this guy just decided like, now's my moment to try to be funny, and just was constantly out there. It was insane.
Oh dear.
So he was keeping other people from really getting involved and was kind of running over jokes, and it was a little much. So that was off-putting, but the rest of it went pretty well. You do these like sections where the first section we did this like we told a fairy tale, and we would tell it, like five of us would be up there and we would in parts tell our fairy tale.
So it was like a team event.
Yeah, and the teacher would be like pointing at one person, and then that person would speak, and that's how the tale kind of got told, right?
Right, and this was for an audience, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then the audience would call out characters, essentially, or like some kind of role that the person would fill, and then each one of us would get one of those roles, and we would retell the story in the same way. We had to attempt to retell the same story, but in like different characters, and I ended up with like detective noir was like my archetype kind of thing.
Oh, cool.
And it was fun. It was really good. Then they did a couple other games like that. And then we kind of just did what you'd be more familiar with as like long form improv, which is like scenes or like little vignettes where everybody would come out and act out like a little scene. It was really, I had a really good time. I wasn't super nervous. My stage fright got broken really easily. And then it kind of broke me of it totally. Like I'm totally down with doing it again. I'm taking level two, which is super fun. And
that's awesome, man.
Yeah, like it's really, it's such a supportive, fun environment. Like I just couldn't recommend it enough to everybody. If you have a little improv theater, like in your city or wherever you might, because they're not only in New York. There's one in Orlando that's actually pretty big. The SAC Comedy Club in Orlando is where Wayne Brady came out of famously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. That's and then awesome. Chicago's got a bunch of them, Seattle, San Francisco. Like if you're in a major city, there's probably multiples of improv theaters, but even small towns have a lot. A lot of them have some form of that kind of class going on. And it's really fun. Definitely recommended. But the story I was going to tell is I was in class last night and they shoot stuff all over New York. Obviously we've talked about that before, and mm-hmm. there's a new show shooting called Brain Dead.
Okay.
Which has Mary Elizabeth Winstead in it.
Oh.
Now, I did not see her, but to preface, so that Ash doesn't lose himself while he's listening to this.
Right.
To preface that. But we were in class and they were like, so we have to shoot a scene. They like didn't know we were going to be there and we didn't know they were going to be there. It was like this big
in the
mix
place
up.
Where your class was?
No, they weren't in it. They were shooting a scene directly out front of our door.
Oh, okay.
So they came in during our, because we take a break like halfway through class, and they were in there blacking out our windows.
Oh, weird.
Like hanging up, they hung up like, it makes the windows look like basically like nobody's inside kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So they blacked out the windows, and then we finished at 10, and they were still shooting out in front of our door. We had to call them, like call the PA that was dealing with us, and the PA had to come in and just stand. We were locked inside of our classroom for like 15 minutes while they were shooting a scene directly out front of our door.
That's interesting.
And we kept joking about having them let us go to craft services and get a sandwich for all our troubles. And he kept like looking at us like hoping we weren't being serious, like, please say you're not actually, I can't do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was really funny to watch us get trapped inside while they were shooting what is a new pilot for CBS, like directly out front of the door. And we were just sitting there waiting.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, look for the show Brain Dead next season, I guess, or series or year, I guess. And if you see a door in Brooklyn that looks blacked out, that's I'm probably inside of it.
Wow, that's crazy. You can you'll watch that pilot and be like, that's me. I'm right there.
I think our sign would still be in the window. So if you see a sign that says Annoyance Theater, like I'm actually in that building.
Oh, wow. Does that get you your SAG card for being in the building?
We asked, and then our teacher was like, everybody hand out their headshots on the way out. That PA looked so nervous. We were all cracking jokes around him, and he looked terrified that we were being serious the entire time.
Oh, my God.
So it was pretty amazing, but that's it.
Awesome.
I mean, that's all I've really been up to, that kind of stuff. And then Melissa had a birthday and we did that and it's been fun. But I know I've been out for a few weeks, so I could probably talk forever if I wanted.
Yeah, that's cool. But, well, why don't we dive into the box of topics and then
let's see
where it goes.
Sure. You want to start?
Yeah, sure. So I've been listening to an audiobook of the newest canon Star Wars novel, which is called Bloodline.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's the story takes place 6 years prior to Force Awakens and is all about Leia, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I'm almost through the book, and I'm not going to talk about any spoilers, but, you know, obviously 6 years prior to the Force Awakens, you can imagine there's some important things that happen around that time. You know, if you kind of work backwards from,
right,
from where you're at. And, what I will say about it is, you know, the story is good, and the reader of the book is really good as well. But my only gripe so far with the book is that I think the audiobook is about 12 hours long.
Okay.
And it takes like almost 8 hours to get to something that is what I perceive to be, kind of like something that could move the needle in the Star Wars universe, you know?
Sure.
Where it goes from just kind of being a story about anything to being something where it's like, oh, right,
this is about a thing. Yeah,
yeah, this is about a thing. And like, oh, I never thought of that before. You know,
it is interesting though, because Leia, they really do just kind of drop you in on Leia.
Yes,
in the movie.
Yes.
Like she's just like established and there already, which, you know, having history with that character makes sense. But it's very like, you do feel like you missed a chunk of storyline that put her into that position.
Absolutely. And I think that you know, finally getting towards the end of this book, we're starting to sort of move in the direction of where she is in The Force Awakens, which is really exciting. And let's see, what was the other part? It's you know, the previous book that came out, which I think was called like Star Wars Aftermath or something. It's part of a trilogy,
right?
That book was very sort of complicated, and there were a lot of different characters, and they were constantly moving around to different places. And after a while, it just became very hard to follow, in my opinion.
Right.
And this one is centered just on a number of characters, and it's sort of easier to follow. And I think it tells a better story in doing that. So, so far, I'm optimistic for what the end of this book is going to be. But like I said, you know, like that's sort of your warning if you're interested in getting into this book, is that you'll read through over half the book and go, okay, well, where does this, you know, tie into The Force Awakens? And, you know, it does, but you just have to hang with it. And if you can hang with it, I think it's going to be rewarding at the end. So that's Star Wars Bloodline.
I mean, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, 'cause with, you know, when they wiped out the wiped out the old EU,
yeah,
that leaves a lot of sort of unanswered questions about how people got where they were and what happens, and you know, why people are the way they are now. And so at this point, you can get it on the ground floor. It's almost like when they, you know, all the comics rebooted and started over again. So there's an opportunity to start over and sort of keep track with these books. And, you know, like I said, so far, the first one was not so good. And this one I think is a little better. And then I think there are a couple other books that fall in line as well. Like I think Tarkin, made the cut as being part of the canon, but that book was just like sort of confusing because I feel like it tells the wrong story about like how that character became who he was. But I mean, that in itself was still pretty good too.
Before we leave this though, real quick, it's crazy to think that we are in a time where you can be reading books and comics like amidst them making movies that are related to these books and comics.
Yes, yes.
Because it's like, if you think historically, really, every time we were reading the books and reading the comics and stuff, we were just filling gaps in a storyline that we already knew.
That's true. You're right. You're right. And I mean, the things that came after in the EU, like after the movies, that was sort of like the Wild Wild West.
Right.
And I don't know how much, you know, how much control, you know, Lucas had over the authors when they were writing those stories. But you're right. It's kind of like, maybe that's the point, is maybe you would want to read this novel just for the fact that you can kind of be a part of this universe as it continues to evolve and grow again. Cool. So, and with that, why don't we go back into the box O topics? Do you want to tell me about Rise of the Tomb Raider?
Sure. So, cool.
I'm really excited.
Yeah. Post Division and post mainly Division.
We can talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of was a little burned on the open world, a little burned on the whole like non-narrative story, if you will.
Mm-hmm. I feel that.
And I was like, oh, you know what I never played was Rise of the Tomb Raider. And I loved the initial Tomb Raider that they put out, the kind of reboot of that.
The newer one, yeah.
So I went in the store and it happened to be like, you know, godsend that weekend or whatever. Rise of the Tomb Raider was on sale. It was like 30% off or 40% off,
mm-hmm.
which is why I didn't buy it in November. Because I was like, well, if I buy it now, then, you know, it's going to go on sale before I ever get to play it. Because I'll be playing Fallout and then I'll be playing Division. Like, I knew I wasn't going to play it for a while anyway. So I just waited.
Do you feel like you don't need to be on the bleeding edge anymore with games? Because I kind of feel that way because there's just too many games, none of time.
Yeah, I think I only have to be bleeding edge when it's The Division or something.
Something that we all play together.
Right, yeah. Like, if I had the PC, I would boot up Battleborn with Ash because I know he's been playing that a bunch. But, like, beyond that, like, I, you know, other games, I can wait a little bit. There are exceptions to that rule. I will probably, you know, day one Mass Effect or something like that.
Oh, of course,
like,
yeah. Because just for the most excitement.
Part, yeah, yeah. Most part, I can usually wait.
True. Okay.
So I would say, first off, the game is fucking gorgeous. Like, beautiful. They drove the engine really well. The renderings of the scenes are fantastic. Now, with the knowledge that Uncharted 4 is out, maybe not that fantastic, but they are still really, really gorgeous. They did a really good job of the environment,
mm-hmm.
and of characters. Everything looks really good on the Xbox. The gameplay is super familiar. It kind of felt like they just took the game and added next-gen kind of level to it and put some mechanics around it, essentially. But I haven't gotten super far into the story. It does a lot of time jumping, and it's kind of starting to fill the gaps of who Lara Croft is. You're basically chasing after your dad's legacy. So you're kind of jumping around in time from... you start towards the end of the game, actually, from what I feel like, from the very kickoff. And then they bounce you. They kind of pull the... was that like Guy Ritchie does it, or, you know, whoever. It's like a movie trope where they bounce you all the way back to the beginning and kind of take you back to where you were at the start.
So do you start with your abilities from the last game, or do you start with zero? Or
start at zero again. You don't carry anything over.
No, I mean, you know, like there was that one Batman game where you started out with some of the abilities from the previous.
They give you a bow basically right away, teach you how to like poison the arrows right away.
Mm-hmm.
You have like the skill tree kind of opens up pretty quickly. Like you're starting to add to your abilities relatively fast. It's not quite as brutal as the first game where you're truly that kind of like beginner who has no idea what they're doing at all.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I think you have a handgun immediately too. Like there's a few things that they bounce you kind of like immediately into having and doing. So you're already kind of the badass Lara Croft, but you're not quite the badass Lara Croft yet, I guess is the way I would put it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. You're not carrying two handguns and running around and shooting people and solving puzzles.
Right.
You've still got the eagle vision kind of stuff. All that kind of is there. You're still learning. I think this is a new mechanic. The other thing is I didn't play the last one in so long that I'm blurring what was new mechanics and what weren't. But there's some where you have to like find these random objects around you, and they teach you how to learn a language essentially. Huh. And you have like a 1 through 5 ability in that language, and then as you find artifacts, you can either decipher them or not based on how much skill you've built up. And they seem completely optional. Like, I'm sure they're somewhat integral. Like, you probably have to be minimal at some of it to get through the puzzles.
Does it add to the lore of the game? Or
yeah, it's like adding to the lore and kind of the objects around you and the story that exists around you.
Sounds cool.
So it's pretty cool. It's still very much like adventure, you know, hunt for objects, solve puzzles. Yep, it's still super, super stealthy. There's like a scene that I did a little while ago where you're kind of in this snowy forest, and there's this group called the Trident. It's a three thing. Yeah, I'm going to go with Trident.
Trident would make more sense.
They are kind of after the same thing you are, and they're trying to keep you out of the way. So there's a scene where they're all in the forest where you are, and you have to kind of like stealth around them and take them out quietly or avoid them entirely if you can. And you can like jump up into trees and like hide on a branch and then, you know, jump down on them or mm-hmm. hide in bushes.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Then, like, pull them into the bush. So it's not quite as like Assassin's Creed-ish, but it's near-ish to that. There's a good stealth mechanic.
It sounds like they improved the cover system from the previous game.
It's still not, like, you know, Gears style cover or Division or anything like that.
I meant more like
the stealth
hiding.
Cover.
Hiding
yeah, the cover. hiding cover is a lot mm-hmm. better and a little more clear cut as to whether you're actually hiding or not.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, it really is super enjoyable. And if you can pick it up cheap, like I did, I like can't recommend it enough because it's one of those, like, it's a straight narrative game. It's just a bunch of puzzle solving and like, you know, I forgot that, like, what it's like to play a game that you can hit pause on and go eat dinner.
yeah, for sure.
Like, when Melissa's like, hey, can we get going? I'm like, yeah. And I just hit pause, and I'm like, the game is officially paused. And then we, like, leave. And it's constantly auto-saving, so I never really felt too bad. There was a fight you have with a bear, and I died, like, 7 times during the fight with the bear just because I wasn't being smart about how you were supposed to fight him.
Mm-hmm.
But the checkpoints were, like, super on point. Like, it was, like, dropped you right before where you ran into the bear essentially, like each time, so you didn't feel like you were like getting punished if you did something slightly wrong or whatever it might be.
That's cool. It's nice to play a single player game that doesn't require, you know, being online mm-hmm. or doesn't require you to get a group of people together, and you can just kind of enjoy it at your own pace. You don't have to worry about like you know, exploits and all this other nonsense. Yeah. Right, I feel like these games unfortunately are drying up in favor of the competitive games, but
I'm
glad to see that we still have things like this.
It is true, but I really enjoyed it and still enjoying it. They've got tons of game left as far as I can tell. It doesn't seem too short.
Absolutely. And it seems like the season pass that is available adds a bunch of stuff to the game too, should you desire more to play.
Mm-hmm. The other game I didn't pick up, speaking of season pass, that looked really interesting was the new Hitman.
Oh,
you saw how they're releasing it in
like
seasons.
Episodic. Yeah, that was kind of more your game than mine. I never really played more than like one or two of those games.
Yeah, it looks like you can pick up the whole thing for $60 or like pick up the initial pack for like $30 or something. Mm-hmm. And then
that's cool.
After that.
Yeah.
Anyways, Rise of the Tomb Raider is really fun. And if you missed it like I did, and possibly on purpose like I did, you know, wait for the sale and pick it up and play. It's fun. Sweet. I'm enjoying it.
Excellent.
Let's talk, since you chose mine, I'm going to say Sisters.
Oh, so I recently saw the movie Sisters, and you saw it as well, right?
I did.
We talked a little bit offline about it. I think the reason why I wanted to bring up this film is because, A, supposedly it's shot, you know, it's not shot, but based in Orlando.
Yeah.
But not any part of Orlando I'm familiar with other than the convention center, which is what they use as the airport.
So
which
you
is kind
said
of funny.
They used our convention center as the airport. Are you sure?
All I know is that there is, when they quote unquote leave the airport, there is a shot of
what
is...
Oh, but they're not there.
they may not be there. But
some creative editing.
There was an interior that reminded me of the interior of one of the new buildings at the convention center. So they could have been there.
So every shot I saw in that movie, I was like, this is in Orlando. This is in Orlando. Like over and over again was like, this is not Orlando. This doesn't look anything like Orlando.
Yeah. It looks like they could have been like in the villages, maybe. I don't really know.
I did a quick Google. You ready for this?
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it.
Sisters, 2015 film. It was filmed in New York City through the end of July. On June 18th, the crew was shooting in Haverstraw, New York. Faye and Poehler were spotted filming in Pearl River, New York, and was also in Five Towns College in Dix Hills, New York.
Interesting. So they probably just took, like, they probably just filmed a little shot of the convention center out here.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's Orlando. It was super random. I don't know why they had to choose Orlando as the city.
Oh, apparently they did use Orlando a little bit.
Yeah.
They do have some external shots of Orlando. Yes. And everything else is New York. IMDb just confirmed that. But it was so weird to me that they chose that because it's supposedly relatively cheap to shoot in Orlando too.
Mm-hmm.
So like, why not just shoot the whole thing in Orlando for a movie that probably had an okay budget? I'm sure it wasn't a big budget.
And plus most of it took place inside of a house. I don't think that would be very hard to do.
Although I guess at that point, like why bother going to Orlando if it's all interior? Yeah,
I guess it's just a random thing. But the thing that I really wanted to talk about in the film is that it was cool to see Tina Fey sort of like let loose and not be like the straight person or the goofy person. She was just kind of more like balls to the wall craziness throughout the film.
It feels like almost that's why they did that movie, because usually it's opposite, right? Poehler usually plays the crazy one. Faye usually plays the kind of button down one. Mm-hmm. And in this one, they kind of reversed and Poehler was the kind of button down, like nerdy one trying to let loose at the party.
Yeah.
And Tina Fey was the one who had been a party girl her whole life. I also really love Ike Barinholtz.
I was going to say that too.
He's wonderful. He's great.
Yeah, that's super cool. So I think the film is a little older at this point, right? It came out last year at some point.
Came out last year, yeah.
Yeah, but that was, I think it's a good recommendation. And it's interesting just because of the fact that it tells a story about two people that are like a little older. They're trying to sort of recapture their youth. And it's just kind of, it's ridiculous. The party might go on for just a little too long, but it's fun.
I think that's what got it for me. It was a little long for like a comedy, like goofball comedy movie for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't love it as much as I love their other stuff. But it's decent. Like it's
kind of reminded me of like if Can't Hardly Wait were filmed with a bunch of people in their late 30s,
like about adults. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a weird second coming of age story.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's how I categorize it in my brain. So that's that.
Yeah. I think it's worth like a Redbox or a Netflix. I don't know that. I wouldn't $5 rent it. I'd $2 rent
it. You know? Yeah. Agreed. Cool. Why don't you pick what's next?
Let's see. Have you played Stanley Parable?
I have not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about this game?
All I know, it was just like one of those games where it's like, oh, you need to experience this game or whatever.
Like everybody talked about it, right?
Yeah, it was like one of those.
I remember going to PAX and hearing about it fucking endlessly. It was like the game that everybody would tell you have to try.
Yes. Yeah, it was one of those. And I just never, it's not, I don't have.
Gone Home. It was like the Gone Home of you know, PAX one year where everybody was like, you just got to experience this game, man.
Yeah, I have no beef against it. I just never played it. Yeah.
Right. So it's been in my Steam pile. I must have bought it on a sale or in a Humble Bundle. I have no idea where I got it, but I've had it forever. And, you know, I've recently gotten my PC, and I've got a Steam Link out in the living room. And I was like, you know what? I didn't want to play anything that I had on Xbox. I was like, I'm gonna play Stanley Parable.
Mm-hmm.
So this game...
It's short, right?
It's, well, short is an understatement for sort of.
Mm-hmm.
I will try to not ruin any of the things that happen in the game, but explain how this game works, because it's, I think once I explain it, you're going to be like, oh, I'll totally play that. Cause it is different than what you would expect. The game is a narrated walkthrough of a guy working in an office.
Oh, okay.
And that is it. That's the whole game. The game starts, you are sitting at a computer. A narrator kind of tells the story of who Stanley is and what he does day in and day out. And then the game kicks off where you stand up from your computer and decide to leave your office.
All right.
And you walk outside of your office, and then the narrator narrates what is going on around you, which is nothing. No one's in the office. So you're like, you walk through the office, and the narrator kind of like winds you through the office to where your boss is. You go to your boss, and you know, story sort of happens around there.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing takes 5 minutes.
Oh, maybe I see.
6 minutes.
I see.
And then the game restarts.
Oh, is it one of those?
You're sitting at your desk again, and then you'll get up and you'll walk out. Things are a little different, and you're like, "Well, that's weird." And then you realize, why am I listening to the narrator? Because the narrator's not only narrating what you've done, but what you will do.
Oh, okay.
So he'll be like, and there, and then Stanley takes the left door, and then you would take the left door, and you would just kind of like listen to him. And I was like, what if I don't listen to him? So then I broke the narrator's path.
Mm-hmm.
And the narrator starts getting frustrated and
talking
to you while you're playing and telling you what to do and trying to get you back on track. And you can then... basically, you realize you can then listen to or not listen to the narrator.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Things happen. Stuff unravels from there. I played for probably, I don't know, it's probably in my Steam, I would guess 30 to 45 minutes.
Oh, that's cool.
And played through many times. I probably had 7 playthroughs that I did.
So it's like something you explore.
It is, but like in the weirdest, like... goofiest, weirdest way. The best game I can compare it to is Jazz Punk. So if you enjoyed the humor of Jazz Punk and you enjoyed your experience playing Jazz Punk, you will. It's a much different experience, but you will absolutely enjoy Stanley Parable. It is fun and weird and quirky. I did sort of ruin it by saying you don't have to listen to the narrator, but
sure,
it's something you could realize on your own on your first walkthrough. I would probably say listen to the narrator the first time, because I don't know that you, if you don't, I don't think you ever can have that experience again.
Right.
But
right.
On the same token, I will say this. If you do listen to him the first time, I don't think you can ever have the experience where you didn't listen to him the first time.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Got it. Yeah.
There seems to be, it's not infinite, obviously, but there seems to be many, 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 many paths that can sort of happen here. And once you've done one, everything is different.
Oh, that's cool.
So you will never, that won't, you'll never get that path again. Like awesome. Ever. It does not, you could do one path and then do the same path and then do the same path and then change it. And then if you try to do that first path again, it's gone. Like it's no longer available to you. It's cool. it's just different in ways that
That sounds super super interesting at this point. Yeah, I think I have to play it now.
Yeah, so like it really. Melissa was watching the whole thing with me. She was laughing through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like she was getting a kick out of it, and she wasn't even controlling him. And then I started like taking suggestions, like what should I do? And she'd be like, try this, and I would do something, and like things would just change all of a sudden. It is a really, really, really well done. I understand the hype now. I'm sorry, everyone who told me to play it many times. It is a very fun, really kind of great experience that is very short. Yeah, cool. Like I think if you played for more than an hour, I don't know what you would get out of it after an hour. So
did you play it on your Steam Link on the TV?
Yeah, I played it on the TV. Nice. I hooked up a 360 controller to my Steam Link, and I've been using that. So
that's how you do it.
It's really nice. And also, side note, Melissa bought one of those. She had, we don't even know why, but Melissa bought an Xbox controller.
Uh-huh.
A One controller, because we only have one out there.
Oh,
and
okay.
She bought that blue one.
Oh, like the one that's like kind of got like the gradient, the chrome finish?
It looks awesome.
Yeah.
It's a cool-ass controller. I was like, this thing's awesome looking.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, so.
That's awesome that she bought a controller.
Yeah. She had like budget, essentially, from work sort of to get it, so she got it.
But, nice. Cool.
But yeah, so Stanley Parable, I can't imagine what it costs anymore, but it is super fun. So if you do have it laying around like I did, then stop avoiding it.
Yeah, well, there's a Steam sale coming up in the summer here, so
that's true. Yeah, summer sale.
That'll be a good time for that.
You can choose now, Scott.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna go through 3 things really quick because I got them all at the same time.
Okay,
so last week Xbox had a what they called like a publisher sale where a lot of ID at Xbox titles were on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of been interested lately, not in the huge AAA titles, and especially since, like you said, we just played Division, I wanted to take a break.
Yeah.
So I thought I would just sort of pick some of the things that looked interesting to me in the ID at Xbox sale and just try them out and see what happened. So The two games that I got are completely different from one another. One is called Rockin' Racin' Off-Road DX, and the other game is called Three-Fourths Home. So Rockin' Racin' Off-Road DX, I knew this going in, and I still bought this game anyways. Like, on Metacritic has like a 2, I think. It's like a 20% or whatever you call it.
It'd be so much greater if it had a 2%.
A 2. Yeah, I don't know. But whatever it is, it's really low. Like, the game gets like 2s and 3s across the board.
Yeah.
And the reason why I got the game is because, and a lot of people that have reviewed this game other than me noticed this too, is that it borrows heavily from, do you remember the old, it's called like Ivan Ironman Stewart's Off-Road Racing. It was an arcade game where it was like a top-down view and you were dirt racing with like different trucks and stuff. In the
I want to say yes, but it
was like a 4-player arcade game where you had these steering wheels.
Oh yeah, yeah, yes, yes,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, and it was all like jumping over mounds of dirt and doing like the, you know, the whole map was on one screen and you just kind of raced around in these little cars.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think this game tries to capture some of the magic of that game, including basically borrowing very heavily from the track design from that game.
Oh really?
Yeah, yeah, it does. But what this game does wrong is
everything else.
Yeah, yeah. Two things that are important to racing games. The first thing being the ability to control your vehicle accurately.
Okay.
And the other thing being the AI of the other vehicles in the game.
Oh.
And what's funny about it is
band or something? Or?
No, no. It's much worse. Like, they basically race like you do. So yeah. So basically, a race will start. You'll go into the first turn. Let's say 3 of the cars wipe out on the turn. They'll stop competing. They'll just like, they'll run into the wall. They'll drive backwards. Maybe after a period of time, the game will sort of like auto reset them back on the track. But you will end up winning a lot of the races, a lot of the, like the cups in the game, just because on a specific race, like 6 of the 8 cars just won't finish the race and they get no points for that round. That being said, your vehicles are extremely difficult to control, and every time you unlock a new vehicle, it becomes even harder to control the vehicle.
So they made the vehicles so hard to control, the AI couldn't control them very well either.
Yeah, basically the AI can't it's not smart enough to know how to navigate the tracks in the game. And like, just like the old off-road dirt racing courses, a lot of the tracks are sort of open where you need to kind of like, you go around a cone and you need to kind of keep going, and the tracks like loop in or on around each other. And so the AI gets like all screwed up, and then next thing you know, you're the only car that finishes the race. And then by the time you get to the end, as long as you can finish all 4 races, you're kind of good to go.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's really interesting, but there's a time trial mode too. And that's where like the vehicle choice becomes a little bit more important, and all the things I was saying about like, it just never feels like you can control. It's really hard to control your vehicle, and it never really feels like you as a player have complete control over the game.
Yeah,
because you'll hit like a little dirt hill and your vehicle launches into the air for like 10 seconds like flies all over the place. It's like a mess. But it's kind of hilarious, and I managed to complete the game, so that was that. You know, I think it was like $3 or something. The other game I played is completely different. It's called Three-Fourths Home. It's essentially a really interesting narrative experience, and it's not even necessarily, it's sort of a choose your own adventure, but it's sort of not.
Right.
And pretty much it just tells the story of this person who is, I think it's set in Nebraska, and they're driving home and having a conversation with their family on the phone as they're driving home.
Did we play this at PAX?
No. Maybe we did, but if it was one of those things where we walked into the middle of it and picked it up and tried to start playing it, we probably would have not understood what was going on. But I think as far as, it's kind of like as if you sat down to read a short story, but you experienced it more like in here, you're experiencing just by playing the game, and you have some choice over the dialogue, that you select in the game. But I just think it's,
well, the artwork looks cool.
Yeah. I want to say that it's worth your time. The visuals are not super amazing because you're driving.
But it's super stylized though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super stylized, and it takes place in what I would consider to be near real time, if you will.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So imagine just like, it's not a long experience, but you know, it's a car ride, right?
Is it like the beginning of Birdemic where that guy just drives a Mustang for 15 minutes.
kinda.
But with game, dialogue at least.
Right. Yeah. And this game is more serious in tone. My only sort of gripe, not like gripe, the only thing that I wish the game would have had is that the dialogue is not voiced. You just read it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have made it better, but maybe that wasn't possible. I think it was sort of a one person studio that made the game. And after you complete the main game, there is an epilogue and a collection of other things to look at. So again, it was relatively inexpensive, and I think it was fun enough that it'd be worth your time if you're looking for that kind of like short story narrative experience. And cool. The last thing I did was I just picked up the season pass of Sunset Overdrive, and I'm completely hooked on that game again. I cannot.
It was Games with Gold, right?
It was Games with Gold, and then last week the season pass was half off, and I just couldn't pass it up because I love that game so much, and there's nothing else like it right now, in my opinion, maybe other than like Saints Row, and I just really love it, so I'm hooked on it. So that's...
Yeah, I gotta play. It's just sitting in my... I grabbed it and just never... It's like installed and I never played.
Yeah, it's just... It's an open world game, but it, makes fun of its... You remember the trailer they had at E3? It was kind of like making fun of shooters at the time, of Duty and stuff like that, and it totally stays true to that. And if you do play, I would recommend, no offense to the male voice actor, but the female voice actor kind of has this crazy like surfer punk voice, and I just think it's perfect for the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, this is Veronica Belmont, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com. Nerds.
Let's talk about some music.
We don't ever talk about music because Ash won't let us.
Yeah, and he's gone, so we're going to do whatever we want.
So we can do whatever we want. Yeah, we're going to talk about music. There have been a slew of good records released, and I thought I would pick a few of my favorites out and talk about them briefly. The biggest one, of course, and I don't know how you could not know this if you existed as a human somewhere on this planet, but Radiohead put a new record out called A Moon. Oh boy, a pool of moon.
Is it actually out? I knew that they...
A moon-shaped pool. Jesus.
Okay.
I'm really good with names if you guys haven't picked that up. it is actually out.
Okay.
You can stream it on, I think, like Apple Music, and you can buy it on Amazon.
I'm amazed that you were able to stream it. I thought for sure
not on Spotify yet.
I thought for sure you'd have to go buy like an 8-track player and then hook that up to like a tuning fork, and somehow that would produce the tones from the album.
It's entirely possible your good buddy Matt already purchased the $90 vinyl special edition.
There you go.
That came with the download, but you can just go buy the record, like stream it or buy it like for $9 on Amazon or whatever. If you are a huge Radiohead fan, you'll probably like this. It's much better than King of Limbs, which was the thing that they put out last. If you're not a huge Radiohead fan, but you really are looking for some music that you can kind of, for lack of a better term, zone out to, I guess.
So they're still kind of headed in that direction.
This is super chill. It's way more cohesive than maybe a couple of the last things. But it's not an exciting record, I would say, by any means. There's a few songs on it that are really good, like killer songs. But I don't know that this is as exciting as, let's say, like OK Computer or Kid A.
Right.
Rainbow, In Rainbows.
In Rainbows, yeah.
Those are probably like, their three like just stellar. I mean, most of their catalog is pretty, to me, pretty wonderful. But this record I enjoyed a lot. It's a pretty chill, pretty great record. We'll move down the chain in sort of order of size of band, because I want to spend a little time on the last one, which is the one you highlighted.
Yep, cool.
So the next big band that we would talk about is a band called Explosions in the Sky.
Mm-hmm. They're
super chill instrumental music. They just put out a new one on Temporary Residence. It is very, 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 very good. It's got a lot of really great movements in it. You might hear that name and think, I think I've heard that band, but I don't know who they are. They're the band that scored Friday Night Lights.
Ah.
If you watched, I think they did the TV show and the movie, but if I know they did the movie. Mm-hmm. So if you watched the movie and you thought this music's really epic and great, that was Explosions in the Sky, which is, if you've ever heard, I'm going to name bands and who know, I don't know what anyone's point of reference is that listens to this show, but
that's okay.
Mogwai or Godspeed You Black Emperor, these are all big kind of epic instrumental bands. Explosions in the Sky, or Pelican, even Explosions in the Sky kind of sits in that vein, but maybe a little bit more approachable than a couple of those bands.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some people out there that are like, yes.
Yeah. So the record is great, like super recommended record. The first time I listened to it, I was like, man, this is the most, like, not to say listenable thing they've put out in a while, but it's very like enjoyable and has a lot of movement to it. The next biggest band we'll talk about is honestly probably one of my favorite bands in the past 5 years.
This one I've not heard of yet.
This is a band called Big Black Delta. It's a guy named Jonathan Bates who used to be in a band called Melodrone, which is an LA band a long time ago. Well, long time when we were playing music, like 12 right. years ago. Mm-hmm. And that band kind of fizzled out because of major label stuff, which is a nightmare most of the time. And he kind of just started making this new band called Big Black Delta, which is just him. Scott, you will probably really like it. I would highly recommend it to you.
Oh, cool.
But,
okay.
I found him because he and the singer from M83 did a remix of a Daft Punk song on a Tron soundtrack.
Wow, that's a very complicated reference,
it's
but I get
mouthful.
It.
Yeah. So the Tron movie soundtrack had
which is actually really good as well.
It is. They did a remix record for the Tron movie soundtrack, and one of the songs was M83 and Big Black Delta. Mm-hmm. I really loved it. But it didn't sound like M83 other than his voice is on it. But I was like, this sounds like a different band. Like, who is this? So I looked up Big Black Delta. He had not done anything yet at that point other than this remix. I think he had a couple singles online and that was it. He just started pumping out this music. It's like what an electronic rock band should sound like. It is super big, super kind of epic sounding, but has tons of like synth and electronic drums, but then he mixes in like real bass and real drums and real guitar and there's vocals all over it. It's all like the first album's very danceable and kind of like big moving fun record. Mm-hmm. The new record he actually didn't crowd, I guess he sort of crowdsourced. It's through that service called Pledge Music, which is like you can pre-order records and stuff, and it kind of like gives the band the money before they've made the record.
That's
so it's
cool.
Like Kickstarter, but guaranteed and more of a fan service site.
Right.
But he did it through there and in the process, like lost a friend and lost his dad during the writing of the record.
That's heavy.
And the record reflects it. He's got a couple songs that sound like they're about either his friend or his dad. But it's really cathartic. I've gone through some loss recently too. And like the record came out at almost the perfect time. It's very cathartic and just, but it's a really good record. Like he composed really great kind of big sounding songs. And if all of that isn't enough for you to go pick up this record, and it's called Trigame Tierra, which
I'm
is like
downloading it now.
Yeah. If all that's not enough, Debbie Gibson sings on this record.
Wow.
She's on one of the songs and it's fantastic. It sounds like it could be a modern Debbie Gibson. Like if Debbie Gibson wrote a record now, it would be this song that she did with him.
Wow. That's really interesting.
And then there's a female artist named Kimbra,
mm-hmm. yep.
who did stuff with Gautier and she's got her own records. She's on two tracks, I think, on this record. But it's really, really great. We just saw him live. If you can get a chance to see him live, he's still doing kind of small clubs. So you can see him do kind of smaller rooms.
Before he doesn't play small clubs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, really, really recommended, but Big Black Delta, they're super, super awesome. And then this last one is
Let's
a friend of Scott
this.
And I's.
Yes.
Yeah. So I gave you this CD, right?
Did you get it? I love it. It's so good.
We have a friend who is feasibly one of our most talented songwriting friends named Claire Morgan,
mm-hmm.
who used to live in Orlando, Florida, lives in Richmond now. He was in a band called Vostok in Orlando.
Also very good.
Also very good if you can pick up their record, which there's a reference to their record on his new one.
Cool.
So Claire Morgan formed this, like, I think they're like a 9-piece band.
Yeah, looks pretty huge.
Yeah.
Pretty
and
epic.
He just calls it Claire Morgan, which is him. And he wrote this record. He kickstarted it and I backed it. But the quick fun fact I will give you is that the second band Scott and I were together in called Sound the Alarm, Claire was the first person to put our record out.
That's correct. Yeah.
Or second, person, weirdly. No, second person. But
it's complicated.
He was the real label that put our record out. Mm-hmm. And was super awesome to us back then and helped us book tours and stuff and was great. And but his new record is called The Lion. Ooh, geez. Again, people, I am very good at this name stuff. It is called New Lions and the Not Good Night.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, and I'm going to say this, and I wrote him and told him this, it is my favorite thing he has ever put out in the 15 years that I've known him writing
music.
Wow.
Wow, that's high praise.
I mean, it's like, you've heard it, right? Yeah. I mean, do you have thoughts before I blabber on about it for another 5 minutes?
Well, I'm just saying to, like, it's hard to compare what he does now to what Vostok was, you know? Mm-hmm. But I, you know, this album is incredible. Like, it's so good, and he's just so good at writing a melody and writing like a verse, you know, and singing that verse in a way where it's like super infectious, and it's just really he's a great songwriter, man, you know.
Yeah Mm-hmm. I talked to him about it. He came and played a show up here, and I went and saw him and hung out with him for a bit, and we were just talking, and I said the two things that stood out to me the most about this record and about seeing him live was that he's stopped fighting his voice's range. So he's written inside of where he's gotten to the point where he knows his voice's range, he's comfortable with it, and he can write inside of that. Meaning that, like, yes, he doesn't write a song that makes him sing too high or too low or strain in a way that doesn't sound right. He's like nailed his range, you know, of vocal.
No, I think that's accurate. I agree.
And then he's put some really beautiful melodies and harmonies on this as well. He's got a female backing vocal that always is like perfect when it happens. There's some really Rainer Maria-ish moments in the record, or Mates of State even. Like,
yeah,
some really cool harmonies, and it's mature.
It's
and
very
it
smartly
just feels,
composed.
Yeah, like he's put together a record that I'm like, God damn, this is what 15 years of, you know, constantly trying sounds like. Like he has put together a really mature, awesome sounding record.
Mm-hmm.
And it would mean the world to Scott and I if you went and looked up Claire Morgan. I know his record's up on Spotify now, but I think you can buy it on his website, which would be clairemorgan.com.
Yeah, give it a listen.
The New Lions and the Not Good Night. Like, it is a really, really great record. We really, really recommend going and streaming it and listening to it and supporting him. He's going on tour, I think, in like a week. If you see him coming through your town, like, go. It'll be really fun, I promise.
And he is the nicest guy.
The sweetest guy.
Give him a high five.
Yeah, tell him you know us and give him a high five.
Absolutely.
He's the greatest. And that was it. That was my rundown of albums that I've been listening to. So
cool.
How about this one, Scott?
Yes. So let's talk about the movie trailer that dropped for Assassin's Creed.
Was it a movie trailer, or did they just intercut shots from the game?
I know. I know, right? Now, here's the thing. And, you know, we joke about this constantly, or you guys joke with me on this podcast about what this game actually is and what, you know, what the movie is now, which is, you know, at its core, it is a tale about people that are being hooked up to machines and going into the past to explore the memories of their ancestors. And that's what this appears to be as well, with Michael Fassbender as the lead character in the film.
Yeah.
And then after the trailer dropped, there was some news about how most of the, you know, somebody estimated that most of this movie would take place in modern times. And it's like, oh no, but like, not really. Come on. Like, I've said this many times, but this game would have sort of be lost in the sea of all the other games that are out there now if it didn't have this component of modern day things that are happening and, you know, reaching into the past to sort of learn about what's happening in the present time.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if you don't care about all that, the movie looks great. And the scenes that they shoot in the past look amazing. And it looks like the parkour is going to be really good, too. And I think that if you don't care, you know, anything about the franchise at all, I think it's just going to be a good action movie. And I was really impressed with, I don't know, the parkour appears to be, looks like, you know, more like practical effects and not so much like wire work, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, obviously I'm going to see it because I'm an Assassin's Creed fan. I'm excited for it. So where do you fall on this? Because you're sort of like, you've played some of the games, but not all of them. So what were your impressions of this?
I think here are my positive notes.
Okay, let's hear it.
I generally think Michael Fassbender is very good in things.
Mm-hmm.
But he has made some turds in his time.
Sure.
I think that the shots looked gorgeous and all, like, the eagle flyovers and all that kind of stuff was, like, dead on from the games, but in real life and looked amazing, or mm-hmm. CGI real life probably, but real life one way or the other. You know, much better rendering, if you will.
Yes.
I also agree that the parkour looked pretty practical and looked really good, like the little bit that we got to see of the free running and all of that. Looked good. I think that the questions of like them pulling it off is probably not a question.
Yeah.
Here's my negative comment. And I know we don't always shit on things, but I'm going to.
That's fine.
My prediction, and I've been wrong plenty of times, is that this movie is going to be a dumpster fire because I think that game movies tend to have really good trailers and look like they're going to be really great. And then have like weird forced storylines that make little to no sense and are just kind of like, huh? Did you see that thing? Mm-hmm. We did that thing. You know, like it's all nudge, nudge, wink, wink, kind of like to the gaming audience, which is weird. And I just have a feeling that this will look, it'll be a gorgeous looking, like plotless kind of weird take on the Matrix versus, you know, Assassin's movies, because all the current day / near future stuff looks like they're trying to make him Neo, and all of the past stuff looks like straight up out of the video game, which to be fair doesn't have the strongest stories ever created.
Right, exactly.
So I mean, we'll see. I could be very wrong, but it just looks, it made me think of the Warcraft movie trailer too, which was just kind of like, well, it looks neat.
Yeah.
But like I have a hard time imagining them pulling off.
Yeah.
Game movies just rarely ever work.
I have no basis for the Warcraft movie, but I agree with you completely on the story for this movie, because basically to get people on board that are not familiar with the franchise, you'd almost need to retell the story from the original game.
Yeah.
To sort of explain, you know, what they're doing, why they're going back in time.
Right.
You know, the struggle that's happening between these two factions and that's happened over time and all this other stuff. And I feel like, you know, otherwise the other path you would have to take would be the one that you described, in which you're just sort of going like, and here's the leap of faith, you know, and like the other thing.
No, I mean, I can't wait till he has to like leap of faith into a pile of hay and it's no longer in the context of a video game. And we're like, wait, did he just dive off of a 12-story tower into a pile of hay? Like, I don't think this will work.
Yeah, I really hope, like, it doesn't become, like, self-referential where, like, he does that and another character walks by and is like, oh, a pile of hay, huh? You know, or something like that.
That'd be amazing.
The other thing that I was kind of weird about is the way that they do the animus in this film.
Yeah.
Which is, like...
That was the Matrix vibe I got.
Yeah, yeah. It's oddly, like, this full-body animus where your actual body is completing the physical movements of your character's memories that you're exploring, which I guess from a practical standpoint, I can see how you can justify that, because your brain is doing the things. So maybe your body needs to do those things too. But like,
I feel like that's just a setup for him almost dying in the animus, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I guess the other thing was that, in the actual Assassin's Creed game, Desmond was already sort of skilled. You know, he kind of had some free running skills. I think
he was a really good walker.
Yeah. Never mind that. But he didn't start from zero and then just fall into the animus. I think it seems like, unless you can establish what the movie character, you know, what his background is.
I'm a little surprised that we haven't heard any whitewashing calls off of Fassbender. Have we? Did that happen and I missed it? Or
no, I don't know. I'm not aware. Maybe it doesn't have that level of, I don't know, visibility.
Like awareness of what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, like if they can just achieve like a B- with this film, I'll be happy.
Like if they hit levels, and this is a low bar, I realize, but if they made it as fun as one of the Resident Evil movies, I'd be like, cool.
Mm-hmm.
They did okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I get the vibe that it's going to be like Hitman or something, and I'm going to be like, no, that was terrible, or Need for Speed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
like the litany of video game movies that are terrible is like so long, and I can't, I've been trying to like rack my brain of what the good video game movie is, and I don't know if there is one. Is there?
I mean, like, you mean not ironically? That's the real question. You know, because Street Fighter was a good movie, sort of ironically. You know,
that's not a. I don't know that Street Fighter is an objectively good movie.
How about Mortal Kombat?
Again,
you didn't like Mortal Kombat just on its own.
Mortal Kombat and like Resident Evil, I would put at the same level of like, well, that was fun. Like,
sure.
You know, sure, if I sure, walked sure. in and paid $20 to see the 3D version of Resident Evil, I would probably hate myself. But, you know, watching it on TBS on a Sunday is fine.
Mm-hmm. They just need to, you know, like, again, they have to tread this fine line between catering to people that have no idea what they're seeing and they just thought it was a cool movie and went to go see it versus like people like myself that know everything about the story, you know, the franchise and the story. Sure. And you're going to need to show me something I haven't seen before. Otherwise, I'm going to be bored with the story.
But there's a part of me that feels like you could Iron Man a video game movie, right? Like, just use the source material, write a good movie that's fun mm-hmm. and, like, engaging, and people probably love it. But it's like, for some reason, that
never happens.
Doesn't happen. Yeah, I don't know why.
It is weird to see the Ubisoft logo before a movie trailer. You know, just, like, straight up acknowledge. Yeah. That was weird. So, yeah, Assassin's Creed trailer. Any other thoughts?
No, I mean, you covered
it. I think
it comes
out, like, on December 21st.
Yeah, I think it's Christmas.
It's
Christmas.
Probably going to be, like, is that the same time Rogue One comes out?
Probably, yeah, somewhere around there.
So that's going to be...
It'll get stomped by Rogue One.
Yeah, Rogue One comes out a week before that, so...
Yeah.
I think this is going to go straight to the red box, I guess, unless it's super crazy good, which, I don't know.
Well, they get that Christmas movie. A lot of people go to the movies on Christmas. So.
Just to see something, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess if you've already seen Rogue One on the day it comes out, you'll need to go see something else.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's Assassin's Creed. What
you want to do that one? You want to know about what Janice Little Girl Blue is?
I kind of do. Yeah.
So, do you know who Janis Joplin is?
What's that? 30 Rock? Janis Joplin.
Janis Joplin. We brought that up today. I was talking to a coworker, and my Plex Q was up on my TV, and mm-hmm. he was like, "Oh, how is that Janis Joplin biopic?" I guess it's not a biopic, it's a documentary. And I was like, "Oh, it's really good. Like you should watch it if you like Janis Joplin." He was like, "You mean Janis Joplin or whatever, like you said the name?" And I was like, mm-hmm. "Oh my god, that is the greatest reference." So for those that don't know, 30 Rock, Jane Krakowski's character, who I just blanked on, what's her character name?
Jenna.
Yeah.
Gets
the part of playing Janis Joplin in a movie, but they can't get the rights for Janis Joplin, right? Is that how it goes?
Yeah, I don't think they get the licensing rights.
She becomes like Janis Joplin,
something weird like that. Yeah,
something weird like that, and it is amazing. It's hilarious.
Like fake songs and everything.
Yeah.
Since you brought up Jane Krakowski real quick, I just want to say something quickly about this season of Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah.
Anna Camp, have you been watching?
I haven't. No, I still never finished season one.
Anna Camp makes she's like a supporting character in this season of Kimmy Schmidt, and she I think in my opinion steals the entire show.
Oh really?
Yeah, she is hilarious. So anyways, that's Anna cool. Camp. She's from those that don't know Pitch Perfect. Yep, she's the blonde girl from Pitch Perfect.
She's the puker in the first one, right?
Yes, the puker, that's correct. All right, so Janice.
So Janice Little Girl Blue is I think it might have been PBS funded, I don't know, but it's a, you know, like a full-length documentary about the life of Janis Joplin, who I've honestly never known a ton about. I know the story of her dying from a drug overdose. I knew that she's this epic vocalist that, you know, kind of broke away from her original band, which I think was called Big Brother, and became this kind of persona in a extremely compact amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Became huge on the scene and kind of the hippie scene and San Francisco scene. But I didn't know much else about her. And this kind of starts off with her family life in Texas. She came out of a small town outside of Austin and was a singer back then in school and stuff, and kind of left her family to go to San Francisco because she felt like she could never be the person that she wanted to be if she stayed in her hometown. So she moves out to San Francisco once, ends up joining this band called Big Brother, gets hooked on heroin. It's terrible. Stuff goes really poorly, and she ends up back in Texas for a little while. Goes back to San Francisco, falls in love with this guy, travels with him for a little bit, comes back, quits her band, and becomes Janis Joplin at that point. What I never knew at all was that she was actually clean before she died. She had completely quit all, which I've heard this story, this kind of sad tale about drugs in the past from other people, but a lot of people who overdose were ones who had gone clean briefly beforehand. And then basically when they go to do heroin or whatever it might be next, they do the amount that they used to get a high, and it does them in, essentially, which is sad and terrible. Wow.
And you said this was a documentary or not exactly? Or
it is a documentary. Yeah. Okay. I thought I said biopic first, but that's not true. And it just kind of follows her life. There's a lot of her sisters in it. The band members that she was in or had with her, both in Big Brother and on her solo career, are in it. There is her ex-boyfriend, that's who she would travel the world with, was in it. Like, it's a really in-depth kind of, they pulled up everybody to talk about this person and kind of her struggles in youth. She was basically just tortured and you know, bullied all the way through school and called ugly and told that she would never be anyone because she wasn't attractive and all this stuff.
Oh, wow.
And really just kind of about her transforming into this just beast of a vocalist and what she became. So if you have any interest in, I always talk about music documentaries because I will literally watch any music documentary. Mm-hmm. But this one is really kind of a great insight into like a really short-lived, you know, fire that we had in Janis Joplin. And I highly, highly recommend it. It just came out on Blu-ray, which is how I watched it. And you can get it, I think probably, it'll probably go to Netflix and PBS and stuff soon. But it's just called Janis Little Girl Blue, and it's absolutely wonderful. So definitely recommend it. But it was something that I caught, and I was like, oh, this would be cool to talk about a little bit, because I do love ye old music documentaries quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah. What do you got, man? You're getting into some news.
Yeah, we do have a couple of news items. The one that I wanted to talk about, just some quick Xbox news, which is the current games with gold are Peggle on Xbox 360.
Peggle 2.
No, I think it's just Peggle 1, actually.
Is it just Peggle?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Costume,
which is weird. The game must be like 5 years old at this point. And then Costume Quest 2, even though that game, I think, is 2 years old at this point, is certainly worth playing. We played it at PAX, and I thought it wasn't very good in comparison to the first one.
Right.
And while I don't think it manages to capture the magic of the first game, when I played it at home, eventually it was better than I remember it being. So, you know, for those that aren't familiar, Costume Quest tells a story of kids that are able to, on Halloween, transform into their Halloween costumes and fight bad guys. And they sort of get into some hijinks and save the day. It's just like a cute, it's like a cute game with very light RPG elements and customization and things like that. So, it's fun. But you know what they announced recently, right? For backwards compatibility.
Don't
Black Ops 1, bro. No, I mean they did. But the man, do you read any of Major Nelson's Twitter comments?
Only rarely when you guys bring up how ludicrous they're getting.
Major Nelson can go on Twitter and be like, I'm flying to Texas for a meeting today. And then the first comment will be Black Ops 1 on backwards compatibility, bro. And it's like, all right, just calm down, everybody. I guess at some point they announced that, Call of Duty Black Ops 1 and like Skate 3 would eventually be backwards compatible. And I think ever since then, like the certain sections of Twitter have just sort of been on fire for those two games in particular. Not even like Red Dead, you know, like but people really want to play their Black Ops 1 again and play Skate 3 again. I don't know, but anyways, Black Ops 1 is out. But the thing I want to talk about is that the engineers over at Xbox figured out a way to support multi-disc games on backwards compatibility for Xbox, which means that we might be able to play games like Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
And in particular,
they're gonna put an anthology out, right?
I don't know. I would, you know, like the games that I would like to be able to play again are like the Dead Space series.
We got one.
Yeah, they did get one, and it's a single disc game, but not even so much for the game itself, because I've completed all of them many times, but I want to play Mass Effect 3 multiplayer again.
Yeah, that would be fun.
And I just think that, like, you know, some people don't have access to their 360 anymore, and if the game...
I want them to put the anthology out because Ryan Clark has still somehow not played any of the Mass Effects.
That's ridiculous, man.
Like, I mean, how, man? Just go play it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. But I mean, an anthology collection. I mean, I do agree with you. EA should make anthology collections for Mass Effect and for Dead Space, in my opinion.
Yeah, sure.
With like remastered graphics or whatever.
I did download Dead Space 1 for Games of Gold and do plan on at some point
now
attempting to play it.
I know the story of the first time you played this game. Did you ever actually play it since then?
Nope.
Wow.
Never went back to it.
That's incredible. And now you can. Isn't that weird? It's going to be like full circle.
Yeah.
Full circle for that. Can I give you a tip on that game real quick?
Give me all the tips, man.
Yeah, here's just the tip for you, which is, and this works in System Shock 2 as well. If you stick with the first weapon you get in the game, you're golden. If you want to do that.
The like weird...
Like if you want to play the whole game...
What the hell is that?
The plasma cutter.
Plasma cutter?
Yeah, if you play the whole game with the plasma cutter and you use nothing else and just sort of upgrade that as much as you can, like you're good to go. It works in System Shock 2. If you play all of System Shock 2 with just the pistol...
Yeah.
You're great. You're good to go. So anyways, that's my gameplay tip. But there's
the week.
Yeah, there's tons of fun weapons in Dead Space, so you can play it any way you want.
Will do.
Yeah, so anyways, multi-disc support. Hopefully we get access to Mass Effect 3 multiplayer sometime in the near future.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're kind of wrapping it up here. What else?
Yeah.
What else do you want to talk about?
I'll talk about these two really quick just because they're different, again, sort of stuff we don't usually talk about, but one more than the other. Very briefly, I picked up I told you briefly about this, but I picked up an analog synth called the Arturia Microbrute.
Yes.
Only of interest to people who really enjoy synthesized music. But it is a killer synth for like $250, man.
I watched some demos. It looks really, really awesome.
Yeah, like it's got the true feel of like an old 80s analog synth for sure. Mm-hmm. And it sounds amazing. It's got amazing bass tones to it. Very Prodigy-esque, I would say, without being a straight... It's like somewhere between like an old Korg MS something and the Prodigy Moog.
Yeah. It sounds amazing. And it's got like a little sequencer in it too, right? So you can make your own...
Yeah, it's got a little sequencer you can kind of like put together and it'll record some stuff. And then it also, what's really cool is there's this new old concept of modular synths, which are like patch bay synths, essentially, where you can get these little, you can buy them for like, you know, depending on what you get. They're all analog usually, but they're little kind of plug and play modules that you can plug in and then line into and stuff. And the Microbrute has a small little port for patching in external modules, which is like rarely heard of. And part of the reason I got it, because I was like, oh, you can buy modules like and start messing with sounds and tones and get all these different crazy sounds out of it. So analog synths are really interesting and super cool, and Scott's been a huge fan and proponent of them for a long time. So when I got one, I was like, hey, I bought an analog synth.
It's a very warm, it's a sort of a warm authentic sound that I don't think you get, because the digital is like too perfect, right?
I think that's changing. Like that's the old film versus digital argument too. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think that as time progresses and as digital becomes, you know, higher processing and better at managing some of that stuff, and then you get the people who are truly, you know, who have given in, sort of like the music and the film people who are like, all right, I'm gonna try out digital.
Yeah.
When you get those kind of brains involved in it, I think you start seeing more kind of ingenuity getting applied to it. So so I think that's changing as time goes on. I don't think it's as true as it was maybe 10 years ago even, but for sure analog still. Part of the reason I got it was I just wanted to plug in something and start playing, which is not the case with digital, as weird as it is, because digital you have to like set up your, you know, IDE and plug in the MIDI thing and then get it. Like there's like always three steps to start playing a digital synth, whereas like an analog, you're like, you could just plug it into any speaker system and start playing, which is cool and fun. The thing I wanted to talk about though, for any friends, like I know Nate, for instance, that play guitar or want to play guitar or just want a cheap way to play guitar or live in a tiny apartment in Brooklyn and want to play guitar. there is a little thing that I have avoided for a very long time called iRig. Mm-hmm. Which is an iPhone or an iPad accessory.
I've seen this before. I've actually looked into this for something else. So did you end up getting one?
I bought an iRig 2.
Okay.
I am blown away by the sound that you get out of this thing.
What, do you just wear headphones or what?
Yeah. I plugged in my regular, like I have Bose in-ears that I wear when I go to, you know, we've talked about them before when I commute and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you plug the iRig into your headphone port on your iPhone or your iPad.
Yes.
And then you can plug a quarter inch in to the iRig. So for me, it's my guitar. And then what's cool about the iRig too is it has both a quarter inch out that you could then record with. So you could run it into some kind of recording interface, and an eighth inch headphone out. So I plugged in I sat in my living room and plugged in. There are no batteries or anything. This is all runs just straight off your phone.
Wow.
So I plugged it into the phone. You plug in your headphones to the iRig. I plugged in my guitar, and then you download the iRig like amp app.
Mm-hmm. Is it like a pedal board? It's amps, right?
It's amps. Yeah. Amps and effects. It's got everything in it. The free one is literally just like, I think, an amp. It doesn't have any. You buy, like, if you pay like $40, you get everything, which is all the different amps and all that
for
kind
the
stuff.
The app is $40, right?
For the app, yeah. Okay. The iRig 2, the little plastic thing you buy, is $40.
Wow, that's super cheap. That's super reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And then the app you put on your phone is either free, or you can like add on purchase stuff, or like for $40 you just get everything.
Oh, you like unlock everything in the app. Yeah. Okay, got it.
So like it's like in app you can purchase, like, I just want to get two amps for $5 each.
But for free, you just get like a basic Marshall amp?
You get like
or
a
something.
Marshall. Yeah, essentially. But I plugged it in and started playing it. Jesus, Scott, like, you know me, and like you with analog keyboards, me and like tube amps are like, that's my baby. Like,
very particular about the sound.
Yeah, this thing sounds fucking amazing. Like, it is. Sorry for the. I dropped the F bomb. That's how great it is.
What?
Yeah.
The F bomb?
Yeah.
On this podcast?
I know.
Unbelievable.
No, it is so close to a real sound. Like, it's not perfect by any means, but for a $40 output and to be able to plug in a guitar and just start playing. It's crazy. It is crazy to think that that's where we are with this technology.
It probably sounds a heck of a lot better than like the tiny little crate amp that you would have to buy.
Yes.
Otherwise, yes. You know, so if that's
way less annoying to your wife and everyone else in the room built around you.
So if that's your basis for comparison, like, this seems like a no-brainer to just do something that's very small and compact and still let you play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool.
And the app is really easy to use. It's really not a pain, and it's got a tuner built in and a bunch of other little gadgets that you need to play guitar. And I honestly, part of the reason I got it was like, well, when I plug my guitar directly into my recording interface and then I pull up Logic, like, it takes a lot of processing power to run a guitar rig inside of the computer. So when you run like multiple channels, stuff just gets bogged down after a little while. So sometimes it's hard. And sometimes I just want to like jam out an idea, like play something and see how it goes. And this is like, it's all there. It's incredible. I think you can even record in the app too, like do little recordings if you want. Like, I'm blown away by the quality of this thing. And for a $40 output to get started, I couldn't put enough recommendation on it. But
that's awesome. Looks like they make other stuff too, like little like MIDI keyboards if you need like a compact.
Yeah, they have a bunch of stuff that's like will plug into your like Lightning port or your headphone port and like run off your iPad and do stuff, so you could play like GarageBand with your keyboard or you know, play guitar into it, and they seem pretty quality. So for $40, if you see it on sale and you play guitar, or if you've been waiting, because I have too. Like, I didn't buy the original iRig because I didn't buy into it, sort of, you know.
Yeah.
Man, I'm totally willing to eat my words on that one. It's really great.
That's
so
cool. That's awesome. I see here that they also make a little microphone too that plugs into your iPhone if you're doing a podcast.
Yeah. I'm sure that's okay. You know, I'm sure it's not like the greatest. The microphones, I think the tech needs to be, it's weird. Like, microphones, I'm still, I think, a little unconvinced.
They make a bunch of stuff though. It just seems like if you need a unique solution you needed for your guitar, it seems like they make something for you, which is super fascinating.
If you were like doing little podcasts or like remote podcasts with your iPad, or you were, you know, wanted to play guitar while you're out or, you know, doing whatever you're doing, like, this thing is great.
That's rad.
It's taken place of the pod, I would say, as far as like a portable guitar thing. So, cool. So check it out. The iRig stuff seems pretty awesome. I was pretty happy with my purchase.
Nice.
Yeah, we're almost done, everybody.
Yeah, I think so. Do you want to
stretch this thing for an hour and a half?
That's what we do. Recently, Ubisoft announced the next free content pack that's coming to The Division in their 1.2 update.
It's kind of cool that they're doing the patches at first, just to get some more stuff on there.
Yeah, this is going to be a free update, and just like the last one. And so they have like three major things that are coming in the next game. which are, there's going to be new Incursion, and you know what I'm already reading, and sort of we feel the same way, is that we hope it's better than the first one, because I think what we were expecting with the Incursion is like story content, and it was more like a horde mode.
Yeah.
And
did you ever beat it?
Without me? I think I'm taking a break from the game, to be honest with you. But you know, if there is some compelling story content that gets put back into the game, even with the season pass, I think I would go back and try it again.
Sure.
So they announced that. They announced that they're going to have a new thing to do in the game, which they called high value targets, I believe, in the video that I saw.
All right.
And it sounds like what it is that they are adding new named characters to, you know, to the whole environment.
Just to the maps. Yeah. Okay.
There's going to be like a high value target vendor inside of your base, and you go to that person to figure out like who you need to hunt down that day. And it gives you,
like sort of like a like contract.
Yeah, it's like stuff, a new daily. Sort of. It gives you something to do.
That's cool.
Other than just like running the missions over and over again, which is nice. And then the last thing is the thing that I'm still kind of confused about.
Is this the tap game that they're putting into it called?
Oh yeah, I called it Cut the Rope. But basically, here's what they're doing, and you don't know anything about this, right?
No.
They're giving players in the Dark Zone the ability to run up to your extraction helicopter and cut the rope and make all the gear fall off the rope.
What?
Uh-huh.
What?
So basically, they're trying to get people to hang around.
To guard their shit once they've put it on.
Right, so you can't just run up and throw it on the helicopter and then run away. And
so at this point, they've taken out any ambiguity as to whether you should fight each other while you're standing next to the rope.
Yeah, they so badly want you to fight each other, but people are just like, I know that these are the rules they've established in the game, but it just feels like griefing no matter what you do.
Well, because it's like, what I liked about it was that it was Gray Zone, and you saw this like weird psychology play out of people being like, well, I don't want to fuck with anybody because I've got some gear I want to get on there too. I just want to get this on and like get out of here. So now they're basically going like, oh, some jerk face can, now you have to, because if anybody goes near the, because how would you know? So somebody could walk up with gear that's like inconsequential that you wouldn't know essentially, and then just cut the rope to be a dick and like run away, right?
Yes,
like,
that is correct. So, I mean, like, you could either
also
look at it.
Could you imagine being like, if we go to the Dark Zone together and then you're like, hey, I need to go extract the stuff and I don't have any gear, like I'm gonna have the largest target on my back while we go over to the rope.
Oh yeah, like if you're standing around the rope with no gear, like people are gonna know. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know, I mean, there's other things in the patch notes as well, but those are sort of the main elements. And man, I don't know, like I think we played that game for the story content and you know, the ability to have fun and play together, and like all this stuff in the Dark Zone now is just making it, in my opinion, less accessible to people that play casually.
But again, like, totally satisfied with that. I got my $60 worth and I enjoyed the game a lot, you know? So like, that's fine. But this stuff, I'm just kind of like, oh God, it just pains me to hear like cut the rope stuff. I'm like, oof.
I agree.
I value targets is cool. If the new Incursion's a little more story-ish, that'll be cool, but we'll just have to see.
I mean, like you said, at this point, like the story content is over for us right now, and otherwise it just feels grindy. And, you know,
if they're like, listening, please add Greenpoint Brooklyn to the to the Brooklyn map. I want to see it. I want to run through the neighborhood.
Yeah, it could be like a new. Hopefully, it'll be in the new expansion content or something. But
I feel like they got to have Williburg, right? Like, it's got, the Williamsburg's got to be on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because that Brooklyn part was so short. Hopefully, they.
Yeah.
Hopefully, there's more. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just kind of interesting to keep up with that game, but I hope, I don't know. Like, I'm not the only person that shares this opinion. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they do anything at all for the people that just sort of play more casually or for the story or who aren't interested in PvP. So that's the update for Division.
My last little bit of news is that my two favorite HBO shows, or well, not my favorite, John Oliver's way up there, but
oh, that's good too.
My serial shows, if you will, Silicon Valley and Game of Thrones are both back.
Mm-hmm.
Silicon Valley, if you still haven't watched, if I have not somehow nagged everybody into watching this show yet, I got two friends that are so not tech people to watch the show, and they came back a day later and had watched the entire first season in a day, because they're only half an hour and there's only 10 episodes per season. Yeah. So it's not impossible to like binge it, but the show is very funny. really, really good. And this season's been super awesome. They do a really good job of like kind of grounding characters and making stuff funny still. I can't recommend it enough. Silicon Valley is fantastic. And then Ash tweeted something, and I will spoil nothing about Game of Thrones.
I haven't seen any of this terrible season. Yeah.
But Ash tweeted something about how I think he said he cried during the last episode, yeah, which, okay. I was very excited because stuff happened and people aren't near each other.
Yeah, tell me about it. That's why I haven't been rushed to this current season of Game of Thrones, because I felt like the last season was 10 episodes that they could have done in 5.
Here's the thing. Here's my only two complaints about this show. Mm-hmm. And then I'll tell a really quick goofy thing that I did with the last episode. But I feel like they have gotten into Lost mode, sort of, where they know they're doing 7 seasons. And have stretched. I think the 5th season was such a stretch. Like, it just felt like they were like, how can we delay this story for, you know, another season and a half kind of thing? And that's kind of what felt like happened in season 5, which was a lot of nothing and a lot of spreading characters.
Very boring, in my opinion. Yep.
Yeah. And this season, they have sort of quickly rectified that. The first few episodes have been faster, people have been interacting more, stuff's kind of happening quicker, which is great. The characters you want to root for are starting to do okay. There's still cartoonishly villainous people on the show.
Yeah.
Ramsay Snow being the main one. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the writers feel like they need to have one of those characters every season. And if they don't, that, you know, who are you supposed to, like, they don't, it's like they've decided that the gray area of the first few seasons wasn't enough anymore. Yeah. But it was a very good episode.
How many have there been? Like 3?
Just
so
3.
Far?
Okay. Yeah. And my only complaints were Ramsay Snow, which is not a complaint about the specifics of the episode. It's just him as a character, which is the same complaint I had during the Telltale game too. Like, it's like, I get it. You know, like,
yeah,
we all get it. He's wearing the biggest sign he could possibly have on him that he's an asshole. It's fine. The other one, and I won't ruin anything at all. But like, I did a thing. I will not ruin it by not saying what happened, but I will tell you what I did, which is really funny. There's a thing that my boss does that annoys the shit out of me.
Okay.
Which is, he will go to a Marvel movie and watch superheroes punch other superheroes for an hour and a half, and pulling things out of the sky and flying and shooting pulse lasers out of their hands and, you know, using magic hammers to blow away enemies. And then he will come back to the office the next day and he will literally go, and these are two very real complaints I've gotten before.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't the helicarrier have barnacles on it? It was underwater.
Oh boy.
And you're like, what? And he's like, the helicarrier was underwater. It should have had barnacles on it.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And you're like, what? That's your complaint about the movie had flying people in it, you know, like, and then the other complaint he has is, if Captain America can punch an armored guy and hurt him, how come when he punches a regular guy, he doesn't just put his fist through him? And you're like, I don't know. Maybe he's pulling his punches. I don't know. I don't think he is. Oh, okay. Well, then I what are we arguing about right now?
Oh my God.
And I did that during last night's episode.
Yeah.
And it's in a tweet. So if you watched it, you can go see. I'm sorry if I ruined anything for anybody, but I tweeted it at Ash and he tweeted back to me. So you can see that little mini conversation, but
that's too funny.
It is a dumb thing that I complained about. That was a real complaint I had during the, I was like, what, why is this happening?
As long as anything is happening in the show, I'm happy.
And shit.
Yeah.
Yes, stuff happens. I think this season is off to a much better start.
Thank goodness.
Season. So if you've been holding off because season 5 burned you out, which it did me, season 6 has been very good, and I definitely recommend watching. So.
Cool, that's good to know.
Yeah, it's been much better.
Sweet.
First episode was like, hey, everybody remember what happened last season? And then the second episode and the third episode, stuff like started moving forward.
So. Good. That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, we made it to the end of the show.
We did it without Ash,
but hopefully...
Ooh, it's another Ashless Chat.
Ashless Chats, part 2. Ooh, the return of Ashless Chats.
Return of Ashless Chats. Oh,
thank you for the title of this podcast. All right. Well, that was episode number 233 of the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. We are on social media as Nerd Appropriate. Is that sufficient?
Go to all the places.
Okay, you know,
the
so Twitters, Twitter,
the Facebooks, the YouTubes, yep. the Twitches, and it's all nerd appropriate.
All nerd appropriate, and
for some reason, no one else wanted that name.
Yeah, it's easy to spell and not a mouthful at all. But you can get in touch with us by writing us at Matt, Scott, or Ash at nerdappropriate.com or nerds at nerdappropriate.com.
Correct.
Yep. And I guess we'll be back next week with all new adventures and shenanigans. Maybe Ash will be back from his walkabout.
Yeah, man. I missed you guys.
Yeah.
It's for a few weeks.
Yeah, so. We took a week off because, you know, things happen and I like having editing breaks sometimes and that's nice.
Yeah.
And, but we're back. It's
a couple weeks and we're back. Yep. So thanks everybody.
And
thanks
I think MegaCon is next week. So hopefully we'll have some tales to tell from MegaCon.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm so going this coming weekend?
I think next weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend.
I'm going to a taping of a new show called Debate Wars with Michael Ian Black this weekend.
Oh, so that sounds cool.
We'll talk about that.
All right. So we'll hear about that next weekend. Sounds good. Yeah. All right, everybody. Have a nice week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is Matt. I don't know why not what we usually
you
say
do
here.
That again?
Sure.
It's like you're leaving an outgoing voicemail message.
If you'd like to get in touch with me, please call. Go f*** yourself.